I grew up in a Christian home and always had just a deep desire to go to church, even when we didn't go on a consistent basis. I always really wanted to go. But I had a really significant experience when I was 11 that totally changed my life and my faith. When I was 11, my twin sister and I were walking home from school, and we were hit by a car as pedestrians. And it was a really serious accident, but no broken bones or anything like that. There was only one man that was attending to the scene initially, and so I wasn't breathing or responding, and so he pronounced me dead and moved on to my sister. Luckily, a reserve police officer was working nearby and saw the accident happen, so he came over and gave me CPR, which is how I'm here today. The next part is something that I used to not share. I used to leave this out of my testimony just because of how people had reacted in the past, but about 8 or 9 months ago, I really felt God placing it on my heart to share my full story. While I was unconscious, I remember going to heaven and meeting St. Peter, and I remember just having no awareness of my body and feeling totally at peace. And that it was a very short experience, but I remember he told me that it wasn't my time, and then I woke up in the ambulance. And so that experience really solidified my faith for me and really created this deep desire to just follow God, and it changed the way that I view my life here on earth. I know that there must be a reason that God sent me back, and there's a purpose for my life. There's a purpose for all of our lives. I feel like I live my life in kind of a fearless pursuit of where He's leading me and what His purpose is for me. And that's shown up in a lot of ways in my job, where I've moved, and how I've served in the church. I've served for quite a few years now at different churches from when I've moved around. And all of the serving opportunities were not because I was seeking them on my own, but because someone asked me if I would want to serve. And I feel like that's God giving me an opportunity and showing me where He wants me to go. So whether that was helping with setup and tear down at a church in SoCal, or now being on the welcome team here at Sync and working with the high school ministry at Menlo Church, I can totally see why God has called me to different serve opportunities at different points and how He's using that. And it's just one of the many ways that I can see Him leading me to where He wants me to go.
That's so great. Sarah couldn't be here with us today, but that's such a powerful testimony, and she'll be here next week. And if you want to connect with her and just hear more of her story, she would love to sit down or have some coffee with you. She is someone who, as we know from being on the welcome team, makes you feel welcome. And if you, when you're watching that, and as you'll see, there's a bench right there, and every single testimony that we showed included that bench. Either people were sitting on it or they were not sitting on it. And that was intentional, because a lot of times in our journey with God, we can feel like we're alone. But that bench is there to remind us that we're not alone, that Jesus is sitting with us when we're navigating our life. So we just invite you to continue to think about your own life and how Jesus is with you and you're not alone. Well, today we're wrapping up our six-week series, Who is Jesus? Through the eyes of the gospel writer John, and we're talking about Jesus as servant. And I love the Brazil team. Laura, you are awesome. I don't know where you are yet. She is so rad. Just give Laura anything, and she'll do it five times over. And we had a meeting today, and she gave us all these little wristbands. And the cool thing about these is that they have names from some of the children that we'll actually see when we're in Brazil. And this one says Diego. And it's a reminder for us to be praying, for me to be praying for Diego. And I'll be able to see Diego when I'm there. And so it's just a wonderful reminder. People, as Laura said, a lot of these children are saved from human trafficking or saved from just really horrible situations. So it's an honor to be able to worship Jesus alongside and love. And we invite you to be praying for us as we're going. Well, Jesus as servant. when I was thinking about this message, thinking about today being centered around Jesus as servant, I was just remembering and reflecting on a few different areas and seasons of my life. And I found myself reflecting when I was younger and in college. And I didn't really know when back then what my life would look like after I graduated, but I knew that I wanted to use it well. And I remember having big dreams of doing just extraordinary things. I mean, climbing huge heights, making a big impact. I wanted to change the world. And I mean, if you only have one life, why not live it to the best of your abilities? And that's what I thought. But as I lived with all these aspirations, as the questions of where and how and what just swirled around in my mind and in my heart, I realized that I was lacking the biggest question of all. Why? I mean, I wanted to do extraordinary things, but why? I wanted to just climb huge heights, but why? I wanted to make a big impact. I wanted to just do extraordinary things and change the world, but why? And I realized that as I was wrestling with that complex word, why, I realized that I was ultimately searching to find meaning to my life and how to live out of that meaning. And since I wanted my meaning to be extraordinary when I was younger, I thought, all right, let's do something really extraordinary to find it. So for a year, my senior year of college, I worked and I just scrounged up as much money as I could. And I bought a plane ticket to go to Africa for 2 months and Europe for 1 month. And I would backpack Europe by myself. And I viewed this trip as just this mountaintop experience that I would journey across the world just to find my great, extraordinary meaning. And then when I'd get back home, I'd live it out, that I'd change the world. And now young college Michael, he only went to Canada or Mexico. He never really traveled that much. I mean, people in this area, I was in student ministry, and they would go to like 5 different countries in 2 months. I'm like, wow, I barely went out of Washington State until I was in college. But I didn't care. I packed my bags, and I set off. And the 2 months in Africa, there were just like this whirlwind of growth, and that definitely changed me forever. And then it was my time for Europe. You see, in Africa, I was with a lot of different missionaries, and I made a ton of friends, and I was able to go with some friends from college. But in Europe, I was doing it 100% on my own. And I viewed this kind of mountaintop experience, the Europe portion, as my just rite of passage to find my meaning. So as I remember sitting in the plane, I was flying to Paris, and I was just sitting down, just filled with excitement, terrified, and just kind of filled with wonder, like, oh my goodness, I've studied so many sites in Europe, and I actually get to see them. And so I landed, and I was in Europe, and I would travel for a day, and then the next, and then the next, and then the next. And then something happened. I was traveling from city to city. I was seeing sites that I only dreamed ever before of seeing, but something was missing. And this thing that was missing, it actually ended up growing to be so difficult and excruciating that it was super hard, and it took a big toll on my experience, and I didn't even expect it. The thing that I was missing was people. I mean, I was surrounded by people. Everywhere that I met, there was just a ton of people, but I didn't know them. I didn't even speak their language. And I felt like, I don't know if you're an extrovert, I'm a big extrovert. I felt like I just threw myself into extrovert hell. It was really hard just being around a ton of people and not being able to really know them or communicate. I mean, I would go and see the Eiffel Tower. I'm like, oh my gosh, I haven't seen this before. But it didn't matter because there was this little ball of pain growing in my stomach from seeing it alone that just overpowered that experience. And then I'd see Notre Dame, I'd see the Mona Lisa, I would see the Statue of David, I would see the Sistine Chapel, I would see works from Monet, and to top it all off, I had gelato twice a day. And you might laugh, but gelato is God's, it's the reason that I know God is a God of love, gelato. It's amazing. No, but you think that I would have been on top of the world by all of this, but the excitement that all of these experiences should have brought were eclipsed by not having someone to share it with. New city, new sight, ball of pain in my stomach, and it continued to grow. But finally, finally, I flew home. And I was able to hug my family and spend time with my friends. And while I was doing that, I realized that that little ball of pain that traveled with me was no longer there. It was gone. And I also realized that I learned a lesson, that I left everything to search for meaning in the extraordinary, but I found it in the ordinary. That the ordinary people whom I loved in my pretty ordinary life mattered extraordinarily to me. And that meant everything. It was a lesson that I didn't think I would learn, and I wasn't even looking for. I was beginning to understand my why better. Now, a lesson that's kind of similar to this, although it can kind of be hard to find, can be found in John chapter 13 when Jesus washed his disciples' feet. So it was just before the Passover festival, and Jesus had sent a few of his disciples to find a place to eat dinner. And when they came, and Jesus with his 12 disciples went into that room and they ate around the table. They gathered together, they ate, they drank, and then they went into this just deep conversation with each other. But soon, their conversation grew a little more heated. And the voices of the disciples just slowly raised more and more and more, and they found themselves around the table in this kind of all-out argument. You see, the first century Greco-Roman culture that they were living in was deeply embedded with social hierarchies. There were those who were great, and then there were those who were not great. And there were just multiple levels of greatness. For example, Jesus was the greatest out of his 12 disciples. I mean, he was their master. He was their teacher. He was their Lord. And they were beginning to understand that Jesus was probably more than that. Jesus was probably the long-awaited Messiah. Jesus was probably God himself. And in the presence of such greatness, they started to argue about who is the greatest among them. Was it Peter? Was it Thomas? Was it John? Was it Matthew? Was it Judas? And now, we don't necessarily know the exact order of events that took place during the Last Supper, but I imagine that as they're arguing, just grew louder and louder and louder, they were quickly silenced when Jesus, in the middle of that, stood up. And he slowly walked away from the table. And then they had a few layers on. He took his outer layer off, set it down. And then Jesus grabbed this towel and then wrapped the towel around him. And when he was doing this, everyone put their cups down. They put their plates down, and all eyes were locked on Jesus. And if they didn't know better, they were confused at that moment, they would have said that Jesus looked like a common servant, because that's how servants would dress. But he was their master, their teacher, their Lord, perhaps God himself. He was the greatest. So surely Jesus would not disgrace himself by looking like someone from a less lower social class. And then Jesus walked a little bit more, probably to the corner of a room, and he grabbed a basin. He filled it with water like a servant would before they would wash someone of greater status's feet or hands. And the disciples, they were just like, oh my goodness, what is going on? And they were getting more and more confused, because this great man, in fact, greatness itself, was acting more and more like a lowly servant. This was unthinkable at that time. This was maddening. And then, without saying a word, now fully imitating a servant or a slave, Jesus walked over to one of his disciples, and he kneeled down, and he grabbed a foot, and he started to wash. The master had become the servant. And this had never happened before. They had never seen this before. The one who was great was doing something that no one great would ever do. But nonetheless, he washed. And then Jesus, he came to Peter, and he knelt down again. He grabbed one of Peter's feet, and then he just was beginning to wash. And Peter, not being able to contain his just deep confusion and embarrassment, Peter said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" So Jesus looked up and caught him with the eyes and said, "You do not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand." "No," Peter said, "you shall never wash my feet." So Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." "Then, Lord," Peter replied, "not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." So he washed. And Jesus went around to every disciple, kneeling in front of them, grabbing their feet with his hands and scrubbing, and then pouring water over each foot, washing away all of the dirt. And then with the towel that was tied so intimately around his waist, he wiped them clean, disciple after disciple after disciple, one foot at a time, kneeling, grabbing, scrubbing, washing, kneeling, grabbing, scrubbing, washing. Just like Jesus was washing away the dirt from their feet, he was washing away the dirt of social hierarchy, of inequality, of position, of power, of glory. He was scrubbing away the dirt of their greatness. The master was doing something that masters never did and never would be caught doing. But then again, status didn't matter to Jesus, only serving. And when Jesus was finished washing their feet, he grabbed the outer clothing, the outer garment, he put it on, and then he returned to his place. And the room that was filled with such silence probably was still silent. And each disciple realized that they were filled with different feelings, mixed feelings, feelings of humility, feelings that only come after someone has physically shown love to you, after someone has served you. And as their feet were probably still cool from being washed, and as they were still confused at why their master did this to them, Jesus broke the silence and began to speak. "Do you understand what I have done for you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." Now, I want to wager that the disciples weren't simply or fully acting like children often do by getting into kind of immature arguments about who is greater, but that there was something a little bit deeper going on in this scene. And like all of us, we long for meaning. We deeply desire at the very core of our being to have our lives amount to something bigger, to something better, to something greater, to search for our meaning with the hopes that it's extraordinary. I mean, if we only get one shot at this life, why not make it as great as it can be? Why not make its meaning be extraordinary? And when we read this story, we have to remember that the cultural construct is much different than ours. If your life was to be great back then, if your meaning was to be extraordinary back then, you needed to be high on that social hierarchy totem pole. I mean, that was the only way that greatness was measured. And the disciples, being around Jesus, who did so many great things, wanted to be great themselves. And they thought that it was achievable because they were his disciples. They were the ones that were with greatness itself. And as the conversation just kind of sprung out of control and pride started leaking in, and in the middle of all of it, Jesus just stood up and took the posture of a servant, the least of the least. And Jesus served them. Right before their eyes, Jesus redefined what it means to be great. And that's why Jesus said, "The greatest among you will be your servant. For those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted." To Jesus, our greatness is measured by our posture of service. So for the rest of our time today, I want to go over a few different ways that we can better have the posture of a servant, how we can better embody that posture of a servant. The first is status. How do we view others in relation to how we view ourselves? When I was in Africa, about a week before I boarded that plane to get to Europe, I went to a church service with about 12 other missionaries. We were in Uganda, just in kind of a remote, pretty impoverished village. And we were at this church service. And when the church service was over, we were invited to eat at this man's house. And this man had risen in wealth and status. In fact, he was one of the only people who actually owned a house. Most of the people in the village just had huts. So now this house was about a half mile walk away from where the church service was, and it had just rained the night before. So we found ourselves walking for a bit on a very, very, very muddy red dirt road. Uganda is just known for its just deep red roads. And since it was cultural to wear your best at church, I mean, you wore your best shirt, you wore your best pants, you wore your best shoes, we were all wearing the best thing that we had. And so we walked. And we walked, and it was super muddy and super messy. And I remember at one point almost getting to the house and being like, "Oh my goodness, I can't see my shoe. It's literally just covered in this red, messy dirt all over this mud." And so we got to this house, and all of us took our shoes off because we didn't want to trash his house. And we took it off, and then the man was there. He welcomed us. He gave us sodas, and he told us that his wife had cooked their best goat for us. Which for me, I'm like, I've never had goat before, and this is kind of a culture shock. And then I thought, okay, well, they don't have often refrigerators or where we were at or supermarkets. So we were super humbled and deeply appreciated that hospitality. So we sat down, we ate this really good goat meal. It was great, and it was a hot, great meal, and we laughed a lot, swapped stories about America. He swapped stories about Africa. And then it was time for us to head back. So we said, "Hey, thank you so much. This was wonderful." We went to the door to leave and we noticed our shoes. And I was kind of like, "Oh my gosh, I got to put my feet in that. This is going to be gross." And we saw them and all of our shoes were completely free of mud. There were just completely no speck of mud. And we found out that the wife who not only spent the entire day cooking the best meal possible for us, washed all of our shoes by hand with soap and with water while we were eating and got all of the mud out. I mean, I was speechless. We were all speechless. I mean, here we were, a bunch of Americans flew down to Africa to serve only to be served. And not only that, this family, kind of like the story that we hear about Jesus washing their feet, this family was in high status. And in that village, people of high status typically didn't serve the way they served us. But the wife still did. The husband still did. And just like the man and the wife rose in status, I can't help but make this connection to us in the Bay Area. I mean, we live in an area where high status is fairly achievable. I mean, we have venture capitalists. We have booming tech companies, Facebook, Google, Apple, you name it, prestigious schools. The Silicon Valley is just a breeding ground for wealth, for success, for status. And with the accumulation of all of this wealth and success and status, we have an invitation to make a decision on how to live. What will our posture be? Will we be prideful? Will we be arrogant? Will we be greedy? Will we be withdrawn? Will we be somewhere kind of in between? Or will we strive to embody the posture of a servant? I mean, it's a decision that we can make to give when there's nothing to gain, to live and to serve others out of anything that we have. Matthew says, "What do you benefit if you gain the whole world but lose your own soul? Is anything worth more than your soul?" And we know that our soul is found in God when we choose to try and embody the posture of a servant, to try to serve like Jesus served, to try to love like Jesus loves. Whose muddied shoes are you going to clean? Who are you going to serve? The second way that we can embody the posture of a servant is by serving in the ordinary. Now, I want to hit the pause button and talk about foot washing for just a second. I mean, the act of foot washing, just in our days, it isn't that big. And when I look at the act of foot washing back then, I just see it as this huge, like sweeping, big gesture of service. I mean, I've been on a couple mission trips with student ministry. Like day one, we're talking to the leaders and we're like, okay, day five, we're going to wash people's feet. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. You're washing people's feet. That's like the biggest thing ever. And like, we have this idea that washing feet is huge. I mean, it isn't really normal for us to wash people's feet because feet are disgusting. I mean, I've only gotten one pedicure in my life. It was a few years ago, and apparently a couple friends of mine, they found out that I had never gotten a pedicure, and this was this really, really big deal to them. They're like, oh, this is so weird that you've never gotten a pedicure. I didn't understand. I told them I wasn't interested, but then they offered to pay me, and they said there was a foot massage involved. So, I mean, your classic win-win situation. So I went, I mean, foot massage, come on. But it was so funny. I remember getting to the pedicure place, and I sat down, and I saw the woman coming towards me, and I realized that my feet are disgusting. Like, they are hobbit's feet. They're disgusting. They're so gross. And she was walking closer and closer, and I was getting more nervous and more nervous, like I'm in, like showing her some dark secret. And I remember praying for her, oh, Jesus, yes, please be with this woman who is about to give me a pedicure because she has no idea what she's getting into. I prayed that, and I prayed that, and then she got to me, and she looked at me, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I would not wish my feet on anyone. And then she's like, started to ask me to take my shoes off, and I said, okay, I'll do it. And I slowly started taking my shoes off, and I looked to the left, looked to the right, and then I'm like, okay, can you come here? She was super confused. She leaned forward and I said, I don't know if this is normal for people to tell you this, but I feel like I need to tell you this. I'm really sorry for what you're about to experience. And she just, yeah, she kind of laughed. She's like, oh my gosh, that's so funny. And then she helped, I kid you not, she helped take my shoes off and then let out a loud gasp. Everyone looked at me. My friends looked at me, people in there, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so embarrassing. It was embarrassing, but in my defense, feet are really gross, especially if you're a guy who doesn't really care about their feet and doesn't really do anything and really believes that the shoe can cover a multitude of foot sins. But anyway, and back to Jesus. And in Jesus's time, hand and foot washing was extremely normal. It was an extremely normal, customary thing, happened all the time. I mean, before a meal, you would wash your hands, you would wash your feet. Before you entered a house, wash your feet. Before a religious ceremony, it was very ordinary. But since this type of foot washing isn't a customary practice in our culture, I, or all of us, can perhaps view foot washing as this huge, extraordinary, big gesture of service. I mean, honestly, I have like a short list of heroes that I can count on my hand, and the woman who gave me a pedicure is one of them. She deserves that title. But because of this misinterpretation, I'll often view serving as something that needs to be big, great, extraordinary, when in reality, Jesus modeled serving through an act that was ordinary. A lot of people will come up to me and they'll ask me, hey, Michael, how can I serve? They'll feel a burden to just serve for multiple reasons, just to act like Jesus acted, to love like Jesus loved. I mean, right after in John, where Jesus washed his disciples' feet, he told them, a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. And they'll want to show this love to others by the way Jesus showed his love to his disciples, by serving them. And throughout all these conversations that I'll have with people, I've noticed this common denominator in people's approach to serving. If they're going to serve, they want to serve in the best way that they can. I mean, in a way that will make the greatest impact. I mean, the Bay Area, we live in a land of maximizers, and that's generally evident in our approach to serving. So I'll find myself in these conversations about different local nonprofits in the Bay Area. I mean, we'll talk about local nonprofit growth rate, their financial stewardship. I'll just field a lot of questions. We'll talk about relevant data that's linked to impact. And more often than not, we'll finally land on a specific nonprofit to serve with, but then something like available times meeting doesn't work. Like, their schedule doesn't work with the nonprofit schedule. And then the door will just close and the conversation will stop. And I've had this conversation so many times that I often find myself wondering, what would it look like sometimes if, instead of waiting to figure out the best way to serve, which isn't necessarily bad, and I always do that, what if we just got out there and served? Even if what we do seemed to be ordinary. What if we just did that? I mean, it might not be washing someone's feet in our culture, because that's reserved for heroes, but it might be washing someone's dishes. It might be buying coffee for someone. It might be picking up the bill for lunch. It might be picking up the bill for dinner. It might be taking someone's car and washing it for them. That actually happened to me this week. I was super shocked and surprised, and I'm like still super blessed by it. Maybe if we want to know where to serve, we can Google, you know, nonprofits, find a nonprofit and maybe serve once a month. Or you can go onto our website and serve at one of our prophets that our church partners with, one of our nonprofits. Maybe if you're not doing anything on Saturday, you can serve with Serve Your City. And maybe when you're there, you can talk to someone who works there and say, hey, how can I do this more than just this one time? How can I do this more than once? Maybe once a month, or just find a rhythm. Options can be endless when we try to view every opportunity as a serving opportunity. Because when you come down to it, serving is an attitude of the heart. The last way that we can embody the posture of a servant is to serve regardless of the person. I mean, it's easy to serve those in need. It's easy to serve those that you don't know. It's easy to serve those who you love or who love you. But it's a different story to serving someone who, for lack of a better word, is your enemy, or isn't for you. They're kind of against you. When Jesus went from disciple to disciple, washing their feet, there was a time that Jesus came to Judas. And now, a little before this meal took place, Judas had a meeting with the chief priests to betray Jesus to them, sentencing Jesus to his death. And they were just delighted to hear this from Judas. They were delighted that he was willing to betray Jesus. So they said, hey, we're going to promise you money. And then a little bit after that, Judas found himself at this table eating and drinking and then getting in this argument with the rest of Jesus' disciples. And Jesus stood up. And fully knowing that that night was the last night that Jesus would live, because Judas was about to betray him, Jesus knelt down. He reached out and grabbed Judas's feet, and one foot at a time, he began to wash. He began to scrub the dirt from Judas's feet. And I'm sure Jesus scrubbed, and he scrubbed, and he scrubbed, wishing that somehow Judas would allow him to scrub the dirt from his heart as well. And then Jesus, he grabbed the basin of water. He went to Judas and he poured the water over his feet. And then the towel that was tied intimately around his waist, he wiped Judas's feet dry. to wash the feet of the one who's responsible for your death. Although foot washing was an ordinary act, in that moment, Jesus did it with an extraordinary heart. And that's our invitation. To serve. To love. To place others before us, no matter who the person is, or no matter how hard it is. To serve in the big, and to serve in the small, to serve in the great, and to serve in the mundane. We are wired with dreams of doing extraordinary things, to climb huge heights, to make a big impact, to change the world. And we have a God who did that through Jesus, who lived his life not by serving greatness, but by serving greatly. If you want to change the world, serve the world. Because one of our great whys is loving others. And soon, after he washed his disciples' feet, Judas's betrayal sent Jesus to the cross. And there, Jesus died the death that only servants do. Because the cross was the type of person that died on the cross back then was a slave, was a servant. But little did Judas know, little did the world know, that this was the greatest act of service that has ever or will ever be done. Because through the cross and his resurrection, Jesus made a way for our entire being, down to the depths of our soul, to be washed. The forgiveness of our sins. Do you feel dirty? Do you feel unclean? Then come to Jesus, the world's greatest servant, because he wants nothing more than to approach you, to kneel before you, to grab a hold of you, and to scrub away all of the sin, all of the shame, all of the fear, and all of the hurt that you are living with. And for those of us who have experienced this, we have an invitation to embody that same posture of a servant. To love others, and in any way that we can, to kneel, to grab, to scrub, to wash, to wipe, to serve and to love others the way that Jesus has served and loved us. Because by this, everyone will know that we are his disciples if we love one another. Let's change the world one foot at a time. Let's pray. Jesus, I am just humbled that you who are God, you who created the world, you that created every star, every galaxy, every sun, created our earth, you created us. In our rebellion, you came down and served and loved, and that we have an invitation through your strength to serve and to love in the extraordinary and in the ordinary. Jesus, you are the greatest servant of all. You are holy. There is no one like you. There is no one beside you. You are great, and you love and serve greatly. Jesus, open our eyes in wonder. Show us who you are and fill us with your heart and lead us in love to those around us. Jesus, as we begin to sing another song or two, you are worthy of every song that we could ever sing. We live for you. Amen.